The Fan.
It's a day before draft day, and what does every analyst say? What does every coach say? What does every GM say? At some point during draft day or draft week, Brett Blakemore, at some point there's going to be a surprise. There's going to be a wild card, and you may have thought you had everything figured out for bumper to bumper today, but there's a little bit of a wild card. Dan's out today. Gardzi is in. Everything's good. Dan will be back tomorrow, but I'm in today. That's your draft wild card, and everybody that was tuned in to listen to Marty Wetzler III on Wexler Week, on a Wexler Wednesday, you're going to be disappointed. And I want to rip that Band-Aid off right away. I don't want to ignore that elephant in the room at any moment. He is not going to be today at 3:55. He is going to be tomorrow at 3:15. He's not happy about it. He likes the alliteration just like we do. He likes the tradition just like we do. But you can only draft the board that comes to you. And the board that comes to us right now, the draft that comes to us right now, is Wexler Week, will be tomorrow at 3:15. It's Gardzi. I'm in for Barrero today. Brett Blakemore's here. We're in the 651 Carpet Studios. We're out at 6 because the Wild are finally back in action tonight. And Pat Kessler is going to make his weekly appearance at 5:15. I'm going to ask him why he's turning his back on the Gopher spring game this weekend. I mentioned that yesterday. I'm stunned to learn that he and Freaky are not going to be at TCF Bank Stadium for the first time that they are allowed to be for the Gopher spring game this Saturday, 11 o'clock, a game you can hear right here on The Fan. And then Ron Johnson is going to join at 4:15 for draft coverage as well. We have a high school and youth sports controversy to get to that I knew about, but got more information about today and heard from another source on today that I want to talk about. We'll probably do that at the bottom of the hour. We've got Grand in Your Hand to do here about 10 minutes from now. Every hour at about 10 after, we'll try to put a Grand in Your Hand with our national cash contest. But everything for me, Brett, goes back to Seinfeld at some point. Jerry Seinfeld.
I often say that.
It should. Yeah. You should. Because for me, he's on a Mount Rushmore of comics, for sure. But when you're 38 years old like I am, you more or less grew up with his sensibility. Like, if you're a child of the 90s like me, like I think I was, you get exposed to, I want to say I was exposed to the show, the sitcom, 93, 94. So I'm 12, 13, 14 years old. It's in its peak. When I'm, you know, when the children of the 90s were in our peak, you know, middle school and high school, back when we had futures and potential. And you'd watch it on Thursday night, must-see TV, which was a thing back in our day. But you'd also watch it in syndication. I think TBS at one point had like 3 hours of Seinfeld back to back to back to back to back. So when you're hanging out with your buddies, when you're just messing around, you know, one TV's got video games, another TV might have a Wolves game. Somewhere in the house, someone's watching Seinfeld. So I've got more or less every episode memorized. In the stand-up, I've probably seen him 5 or 6 times. I've driven to Duluth twice to see him, right? The bottom line is I love the guy. Love him, love him, love him, love the show. And for me, things can always be related in life back to Seinfeld. And I'm going down that road today as it pertains to the Minnesota sports scene, because I can't tell if it's the episode where there's the bizarro world where Elaine befriends a bizarro Jerry, a bizarro George, and a bizarro Kramer, where in that bizarro world, everybody's really nice. Everybody's by the book. There's no demons in that world. Elaine didn't fit in that world because she needed to be with the bad people, Jerry, George, and Kramer, the people that had edge, the people that had scars. It was a bizarro world for her. She thought she liked it at the beginning, but then realized, I don't fit with bizarro Jerry. I need the authentic. But the more I thought about it, and actually, because I was thinking bizarro world today, and then I Googled it, and I kind of went back and watched some of the episodes. The episode that I'm talking about is when George and Elaine basically swap lives. They swap places, where Elaine is high achiever, working for Jay Peterman, has a good job, successful, attractive. Then there's George Costanza, who's none of those things. He's a screw-up. As he says, he's short, he's fat, he's bald, he lives with his parents. He's portrayed on that show as a loser, and for most of it, he is. But then there's this episode where they completely flip. George gets the job, George gets the girl, Elaine gets fired, and worlds were colliding there, to bring in another episode. That's how I feel today about Minnesota sports. Worlds are not colliding as much as they're swapping and they're changing by the day. I don't know exactly what the Twins score is. I guess they're playing now.
It's a lot to a little, last I checked.
Yeah, I think they were doing a little bit better, I believe. What channel is the game on?
YouTube TV or YouTube. It's like a streaming day today. They're up 10-2 in the ninth.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we better get this in then, because the bit's going to be dead once they get this victory. But I think in general, people are going to get the point. Here's some quotes from coaches, managers, players yesterday. Tough run of games here. We could have easily had a schedule loss, but I was proud of the way we found a way to win. The process is right. I like the direction this team is going in. Going out there and competing every night. We're gaining chemistry. We're fighting. That's the positive. On the negative side, the point of the conversation was the fact that our guys have played hard, and it's been as tough a stretch as I've ever seen. The way we've played these games, we've had our guts ripped out over and over again, is what I said. When you have guys go out there playing hard and we're playing tight games, we're keeping ourselves in these games, and continually it hasn't ended the way we wanted it to, that's very tough on these guys. And we all feel it in our stomachs. It's hard to ignore. If I plopped somebody down that maybe, I don't know, went out of the country for the last 3 weeks and unplugged, let's say for the last month, and I brought them into a room and I said, read these quotes, and I want you to identify which team these quotes are coming from in each of these scenarios, they would have gotten these wrong. Because the first quotes that I read today were from the Minnesota Timberwolves, not the Minnesota Twins. Because at the end of April, everybody would have assumed that the Twins were going to have a really gaudy record. They were going to be in first place in the American League Central. They'd be hitting dongs every other at bat like they've done for the last 2 years. The pitching would be good. The new bullpen would be improved. Everything would be coming up Twins. We'd be selling Dong Show 3.0 shirts on KFAN.com, keyword pro shop. And then you'd get to, our guts are ripped out over and over again, and you automatically say, that's the Wolves. It's the Wolves. We got it. It's definitely the Wolves. And really, you could say the Wild, although you'd have to go back a little bit further.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole other thing in this bizarro world. You and I talked about this on Sunday, that the Wild, it's going so smoothly, there's no sweat the rest of the way. The only sweat is, when are we going to play? Where are we going to play? Colorado, probably, and when? Is it going to be here to start? Is it going to be there? That's the only thing we're worried about right now. Or Vegas, if things slip up with the Golden Knights. But you get my point. This is a bizarre, bizarre week. And again, I know it's a 3-game winning streak for the Wolves. It's the babiest of baby steps. But as Chris Finch, the guy who uttered the phrase, we could have easily had a schedule loss here, I was proud of the way we found a way to win, that he's 100% right. And I watch most of the game. I've got Wolves fever right now. I'm all in. I'm all eyes north right now.
Okay.
It doesn't take much. Doesn't take much to buy me off, clearly.
Haven't they been eliminated for like 2 weeks now, at least?
No, not quite. It's like less. I think they were eliminated this week. I don't remember what day it is. Maybe over the weekend they were eliminated. But it doesn't take much for me to be bought off. But I I like the fact that they're playing well. I like the fact that they're competing. I like the fact that most of the team is healthy, which is, in fairness and savagery, has not been the case for most of the year with D'Lo, with Cat, with Beasley being out for suspension, now being out because of the hamstring. But as I'm watching the game last night, like, I look at it this way. Like, they've just beaten Utah back-to-back games, very fun, very entertaining games. Last night against Houston was not an entertaining game. It was a tense, annoying, we're letting another bad team hang around. I couldn't name you three Houston Rockets if you gave me the roster. I wouldn't believe you that some of these guys were on this team. And the Wolves did not play well. Cat was in foul trouble again. He ended up fouling out. He was back in his cat mode of arguing with officials on basically every call, and it ended up biting him. Luckily, Ant Edwards was around. Luckily, D'Lo was around. Luckily, Naz Reid was around. He played really well, but it was an ugly, brutal game. But they found a way to win it. And believe it or not, that actually is some type of meaningful progress when it comes to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I've gone back and forth on, I know the big debate, and Johnny Athletic and Dan talked about this yesterday, the big debate on how to handle the rest of the season is guarantee the best opportunity to keep your top three protected pick and keep it from going to Golden State, because there's, by most accounts, six really good players in this draft, and this might be your best opportunity. If guys are healthy next year, you'd hope you wouldn't be bottom three in the league. This might be your best opportunity. I'm very torn on which way I go. I lean the way that Johnny Athletic goes, though. I lean the way that the Wolves are going, and Chris Finch said it. We told the team, guys, we're not going into the stretch run here with the mentality of resting anybody unnecessarily, because we're trying to establish chemistry, establish identity, establish a rhythm, take into the offseason a body of work that we can really assess, and that's more important than anything else for us right now. I get that. I understand it. I also see the other side of, well, let's just get another really good player. Because Ant Edwards has been a nice addition as the number one overall pick to D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns. So I get it. I can see both sides, but if I'm forced to choose, I think I go the way that they're going. But you gotta give people some hope that it actually might go somewhere. And this might be the biggest tease in the history of teases, a three-game winning streak against a bad Houston team and a Utah team that's good but doesn't have Donovan Mitchell. I get it, but I think Cat and D'Lo are 9-6 in games that they've played together. That's all they've played together, which is incredible. I think this season, maybe all time, but I'm liking what I'm seeing. And last night was a good example of, Flip Saunders used to say it, in the NBA, you have an excuse every single night to lose. Every night, if you want, you can pick something. We just played back-to-back. We're not feeling it. We've got another game coming up. This guy's hot. This team isn't very good. It's hard to get up for him. He used to say that all the time. The real teams, and the Wolves aren't a real team yet, the real teams fight through all that stuff. And they show up every single night. And that's still what they need to do. So I'm all for taking the last 10 games or whatever it is and bringing that ethic, even a small sample size as it is, and giving some type of hope for next season. Meanwhile, the Twins, the misery continues. They're about to win today. That's great. Day game, too, so they overcame that because they must have had an early wake-up call today. But, again, another ugly loss last night, 7-4. They're 7-15, soon to be 8-15. 13 losses in 15 games. That'll go to 13 losses in 16 games. Everything is going poorly. Guys have been injured. Guys have had COVID. Guys can't pitch in the roles that they were brought to pitch in. Guys can't hit like we thought they were going to hit. But a month into the season, if you showed me these quotes, I would have said you're on something as opposed to onto something. So we're in a bizarre world right now in the Minnesota sports scene, where the Wolves are the team showing promise and the Twins are the ones bottoming out. When we come back, I do want to talk a little NFL draft, because the betting, well, I don't even know what the betting money is, but there's trade up steam, there's trade back steam, there's hold pat steam. Spielman said some stuff yesterday about the ammunition that it would take. He feels like he has some ammunition to move around. I want to dive into what that ammunition might be, because I'm not seeing it quite as clearly as the general manager. That's probably good. He's in charge of the draft, but I'm not quite sure if they have the ammunition to do everything that Spielman said he might want to do in the draft that starts tomorrow. Don't forget Ron Johnson in an hour, Pat Kessler in 2 hours. First opportunity to put a grand in your hand now.
That's right. The Fan is trying to put a grand in your hand with the National Cash Contest. Head to KFAN.com and enter the keyword joy. That is joy for your shot to win more bump to bumper.
Again, the Fan.
The NFL draft is tomorrow. We'll be broadcasting live. We'll break down all the picks right here on the radio home of the Vikings. The fans' complete coverage of the NFL draft is proudly presented by Pilot Games.
I want to play a couple of things Rick Spielman had to say yesterday that we didn't get to Bumper to Bumper. Guardian for Barrero today. We're in the 651 Carpet Studios. Brett Blakemore along for the ride with me today as well. Ron Johnson about an hour from now. Pat Kessler at 515. And we will be out at 6 because the Wild kick off the first of two in a row against St. Louis. I think they've got three against St. Louis in a row. Five of their next something, seven of their next something. They play St. Louis a lot to wrap up the regular season here before the postseason. So we are out at 6 tonight. Fallness and Micheletti have fan line. Keep it here all day is the bottom line. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is open. Booth@KFAN.com. You can also tweet me at JGKFAN. I mentioned before the break, the draft is tomorrow. Vikings have pick 14 as it stands right now. They still don't have a second-round pick. They've got a couple in the third. And with the compensatory picks, they've got four fourth-round draft picks. Now, Rick Spielman is known for trading, right? People like to call him Trader Rick. Courtney Cronin, ESPN.com, wrote an interesting story more or less today that nobody has traded more in the last like 8 years than Rick Spielman. Nobody's had more picks than Rick Spielman the last handful of years because we know he likes to deal, he likes to move, he likes to trade back and get a bunch. Then he likes to grab a bunch and move back up depending on the year. And he mentioned yesterday the possibilities of trading up or trading down. Let's listen to this before we talk about what they might do tomorrow night.
We're at 14 right now, so I think, you know, a lot of people will see how the draft board is unfolding as the players come off. Every time I've been involved in the drafts I've been involved in, most of the time the trade talks, you can talk to people this time of year, but it doesn't, or this time right before the draft, but it usually doesn't mean anything. A lot of people are going to wait and see what players are on their draft board and if they're willing to move up or down. We started our process of going through scenarios. We've looked at scenarios out of a specific player was falling in the top 10. Do we go up and get that player? Rob Brzezinski and Ryan Munnins will be handling the trades this year. And so we're going through what the potential cost of that would be. We're also looking at if we are at 14 and if the board there, we have two or three players that are still, we think, can get, like we've done in the past, trading back, picking up some more draft capital. So we have the flexibility to move it up and down through the draft. But to say, you know, I don't take it very serious at this time on people. Hey, if our guy's there, are you willing to trade back? Or, you know, we haven't been really making any active calls on trying to trade up either. I think a lot of that evolves as the draft process goes on Thursday and throughout the draft, depending on who's on the board and how teams covet players.
You don't take the call seriously right now, Rick, but we do. We've got a day to think about this, and we've got airtime to fill. And the more I've thought about it, in terms of 14, because there's been some speculation and there's been some steam that, and I think PA even said it, and I know Meat Sauce has talked about it as well, that if they're moving up to draft somebody, that it would probably be one of the offensive linemen. It'd be Penei Sewell or it'd be Rashawn Slater. I got to be honest, I don't see in a perfect world, I don't see any way with what the Vikings have this year and then obviously potentially for next year as well, because I think that would have to be a part of it. I don't see any possible way that they can trade up. I mean, they're going to be giving up a ridiculous amount. I printed out the Jimmy Johnson draft value chart because I've never really looked at it. In all the drafts that we've covered, you know, they assign values like a point system for every draft pick on how many points it would take to basically get that pick. What's that pick worth in points, right? So, for example, the first pick overall is worth 3,000 points in the Jimmy Johnson draft choice, draft chart. Number two is 2,600. Number three is 2,200. The Vikings, for example, at 14, theirs is 1,100 points in the first round. So for comparison, if you want to go to where our third round picks are, where the next time we pick, the 78th pick has a value of 200 points, and the 90th pick has a value of 140. So after pick one, our next two picks are worth, I can do that math, 340 points. You're not really getting anywhere with that. You can get into the basically the middle of the end of the second round with that, and then obviously the fourth round picks have diminishing value as well. But I just don't see any way that they can trade up. And I'm not necessarily like down about that. I don't think they should trade up, given that they don't have anything after, you know, they don't have a ton of opportunities to hit home runs. They've got a bevy of picks in rounds three and round four. This is a draft I think they need one in round two. So it gets me, like, number one, if Elijah Vera Tucker is there at 14, I think I just take him. I don't think I do anything. Unless you think you can slide down a spot or two and maybe get a second round pick this year or whatever, I think I take him. And the reason that I take him is because he can play inside, he can play outside. He can play guard, he can play tackle. He's listed, I think, mostly as a tackle, but a lot of people think he can play, he'd be good for inside as well. He's been good in pass blocking. And he did it between guard and tackle is what they say. No idea if he's a zone fit guy or whatever, but he's a guy that most people are saying would be an option for the Vikings there. I might just take him there. I might take Darisaw there. I think I might just stand pat and take an offensive lineman at 14 or trade down and try to get a second round pick if you think there's another position there, because I've said it for a month, where the Vikings are picking in the third round, there might be an offensive lineman around in that vicinity. There's said to be a lot in the top 100, but if you're able to trade back, recoup a second round pick, then you're in the mix for a bevy of offensive linemen possibilities. So the more I've thought about it, I don't think they can trade up. And if they take a quarterback at 14, if one of those falls, I think it's malpractice for this season. I know others have said they should absolutely give it a shot. They should give it a try. For this season, we talked about this on Sunday, Brett. Yep. So you know I was kind of trying to figure out what I thought on it. I landed on I wouldn't do it for this specific season. The more I think about it, especially if they just stay at 14, I think it's absolutely malpractice. I think they need to fill more holes. And also, by the way, I do think they're thinking about taking a swing for a quarterback with a later round pick, with a third round pick. Who might still be there? I don't know. But I think that's where they'd be more willing to swing there. Spielman saying no position is off the table yesterday wasn't a surprise, but I think the fact that he just kind of kept it brief, reading between the Spielman tea leaves, led me to believe that they're thinking about it at some point.
Well, you can't keep kicking the can down the road forever, right? And to me, this is the prime opportunity. And I'm not saying that you trade up to get a Trey Lance or something, but if one falls to you, I mean, the hardest time to get a quarterback is, you know, this is Rich coming from me. The hardest time to get a quarterback is when you need one, right? The Bears have been in that vacuum for, I don't know, 20 years, ever since the 85 season. So I think if one falls to you, why not? I've been preaching Trask in the second. If you can move back, that's who I like.
Yeah.
But if Lance falls to you, I mean, eventually you got to take a stab one of these times, right?
Yeah. Now, but they had, like 10 years ago, they took a stab on Christian Ponder. It was a disaster. I mean, history tells us that, you know, half of these quarterbacks are going to be awful. That's just how it's going to be. If you love Trey Lance, sure, take him. I would amend it a little bit. The only way I'd be fine with it is if you get real aggressive with your fours and your threes and get back up into the second round, or get even higher in the third round if you can, to where you can address some needs that you actually have with high-impact players. Because there's a reason why, yes, you can find diamonds in the rough. They've been very good at it. We all know who they are, right? But they've also taken a lot of swings. Like, they've taken a million swings at fifth-round picks, sixth-round picks, seventh-round picks for sure, using seventh-round picks to bypass free agency, trying to find the next Adam Thielen or Marcus Sherrills. Like, that's fun and that's cute, but that's risky. That's very, very risky. And so I'd be much more comfortable. I mean, look at the point values speak to it. There's a reason why the first pick in the second round is 580 points and the last pick in the fourth round is 54 points in the Jimmy Johnson draft pick chart, right? There's a reason for that.
You're saying we can't go get Lawrence? We don't have enough points?
We have enough points. I don't think they would take them. You know, some places don't like right now. A lot of places don't accept cash. They want contactless payments, right?
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying is the only way I'd be comfortable with them taking a quarterback at 14 and, to use your verbiage, Brett, kicking the can down the road on needs that have been needs for a long time. You were talking quarterback. I'm talking about the more specific needs, but using the same phrase. If they somehow got back into the second round, maybe even got another pick in the third round, you know, if they moved it around that way and took some more high impact swings, specifically in the offensive line, where there's going to be guys in rounds 2 and 3 that people think can be productive, then I'm fine with it. But I would not save that. I would not touch any of the QBs at 14. And you might live to regret it forever. A lot of teams have, but I'm thinking about this team. I'm thinking about this regime. I'm thinking about this particular season. And I'm saying you either got to figure out a way to trade back, get a second-round pick, draft an offensive lineman there, whatever you want, take a swing at quarterback later. I'm perfectly fine with that. But the high-impact picks, the big-time Jimmy Johnson prices, those have to be, for me in this draft, on needs and needs only. And by the way, there's talent at those needs as well. The offensive lineman we've already mentioned. A lot of people like Darisaw. I just combined the names. A lot of people like Vera Tucker. So there's guys that can help you, it looks like, right away. And in Vera Tucker's case, maybe at a couple of different positions, depending on where he fits. We're going to get controversial because sports might be ending as we know it. Youth sports, high school sports, maybe even college sports might be ending as we know it. A little hyperbolic, but not that much. Why is it ending, and is there anything we can do about it? I will tell you, yes, there is, but you're going to have to look within. I'll explain.
The Fan.
Bradshaw and Brian inbox is going to be open here, and I'm going to need some help. I'm going to need some assistance, as well as the phone line, 651-989-5326, 1-800-320-5326. You can also tweet me at JGKFAN, and somebody who follows me on Twitter knew exactly where I was going with this segment off of something that I tweeted earlier from today and has already offered the first submission. But it has to do with sports, specifically high school sports, specifically youth sports. And one of the issues the last year, obviously, for youth activities and high school activities, and however you want to describe them, was you couldn't do a lot because of the pandemic, right? There, people had different rules, people had different guidelines and regulations, and a lot of stuff got canceled. Some places you had to go to different states to participate because their rules were different than your state. Like, it's been a trying year for in a lot of different ways, but certainly in that regard. And you know, it's part of the damage of the pandemic is kids have lost a lot of opportunities, and that's stuff that they'll never get back. And obviously life will go on. They will move on. Things will progress for them, hopefully how they were supposed to. But when you play sports and you're in a team activity or even an individual one and you love it and you're all in and then you can't do it, it's a buzzkill, however you want to slice it. Well, the pandemic is seemingly almost over. More people are getting vaccinated. More things are opening up. More things are going on like they once used to, but there's a new issue as it pertains to youth and high school sports. The teams are there, the coaches are there, the parents are there, the officials are not. There's an officials shortage, a referee shortage. And John Millay, who works for the Minnesota State High School League, used to work for the Star Tribune forever, now has worked at the high school league as one of their media specialists for a long time. He does really good, really great work on John's Journal, is what they call it. He goes all over the state and he finds good stories. He writes about good stories. Great guy. I don't know him well, but people that know him, I know him. Through a bunch of people, obviously, and he's a tremendous guy, tremendous advocate for high school sports. Yeah, because I think he understands. I think he covered high school sports forever, but it's a unique experience, the opportunities that are provided for kids and young people and for educators and adults. And people that know me even a little bit know it's a huge part of my life, was a huge part of my life, still is for in my family with a couple of coaches in my family. And so I take these things pretty personally. But in John's journal this week or today, it's a special edition, they're calling it. And he just reposted a piece authored by Dr. Carissa L. Niehoff, who is the executive director of the National Federation of State High School Associations. And I'm just going to read it, and then I'd love some calls, and I'd love some emails, and I'd love some thoughts. I have some of my own. Here's what Dr. Niehoff writes. After months of working with state government, education, and health leaders, schools in all 50 states have been given the go-ahead to resume high school sports at some level of competition. Schools in the District of Columbia were the last to receive the green light on April 1. This is great news and signals that a return to normalcy may be on the horizon by the time schools begin sports and activities this fall. Unfortunately, there is an ever-increasing issue that could put a kink in the return-to-play plans across the country, a shortage of officials, as in referees and umpires, that borders on catastrophic in some sports and in some parts of the nation. The shortage of officials in high school and middle school sports has been a growing concern for several years. However, the COVID-19 pandemic has moved the issue to heightened levels. In some cases, schools that have waited months and months to play ball have had to cancel games or reschedule games. There are so many contests occurring, with some states currently playing football and other sports they were unable to offer last fall, coupled with regular spring sports now underway. There are simply not enough people to officiate all scheduled games. According to the National Association of Sports Officials, registration of officials across the country is down about 30% this year. In Oregon, the number of football referees has dropped 34% compared to last year. Volleyball is down 45%. In Football Officials Association in California, nearly two-thirds of its members opted out of officiating this year. Tennessee and Georgia have reported declines in baseball umpires. In one county in Georgia, one middle school had to cancel its baseball season due to lack of umpires. In some cases, the number of available officials has declined due to health-related reasons. People opting out this year because of the pandemic. As vaccinations increase and the optics improve, many of these individuals will hopefully return. For other officials, however, the pandemic was a secondary concern compared to the verbal abuse they received from fans, mostly parents. It's particularly hard for rookie officials to overcome the verbal shots they hear from parents. In an article in the Salt Lake City Deseret News, Jeff Clough, assistant director in charge of officials for UHSAA, had the following to say about unruly fans in his state. Utah, by the way. Utah. Not New York. Not the East Coast, you know, rough and tumble Philadelphia people. Utah. That's mine, not Dr. Niehoff's editorial. Parents are out of control. Because of the club and Super League culture, they think these games mean everything. We don't look at it that way in high school. Kids are learning. The officials are learning. The coaches are learning. We have lots of people who are interested in officiating. If we could keep these officials, we'd be fine. Schools across the country need two things, according to Dr. Niehoff. One, more individuals to consider officiating high school sports. And two, an improvement in fan behavior so that officials don't have to deal with verbal abuse and can feel good about continuing to officiate. Despite the fun and rewards that come with officiating high school sports, no one wants to continue if they are continually berated by fans. The NFHS has been actively recruiting officials for 4 years through its hashtag Become an Official campaign. More than 50,000 individuals have expressed interest in officiating during this time. However, more individuals are desperately needed to keep the games going for the millions of students in middle school and high school sports. Anyone can sign up today at highschoolofficials.com. Equally important, let's do all we can to keep the men and women who are currently giving of their time to officiate middle school and high school sports. The next time you think about yelling at a referee during a high school contest, don't! There's hope on the horizon that the pandemic will not keep kids off the playing fields and courts much longer. Let's make sure boorish behavior doesn't keep officials off the same fields and courts. It's not a new subject. It's, I mean, I grew up playing youth, middle school, high school sports. People were yelling 3 seconds at refs there. They were yelling walk. They were yelling get off. They were yelling blow the whistle. I know all the phrases. Maybe not all of them. Some may have been updated, but I've gone on these rants before. It's the same principle when it comes to coaches. And I did this a couple of weeks ago on Cake Show. It's that time of year where we're seeing more coaches posting on social media that they've either resigned because a parent group got together and just made the situation untenable, or they just said, you know what, enough's enough, or they got fired because they're not a very good coach. I don't claim to know every situation. But my same principle, when I was a coach, and I was not a great coach, I was an okay coach, I was an average coach. Because my players, when I was coaching sophomore basketball, doesn't get much bigger than sophomore basketball in the North Suburban Conference. My players would yell at the refs, or if my players yelled at the refs, I would say, look, guys, we're all here for the same reason. You're playing sophomore ball because you need to get better. I'm coaching sophomore ball because I need to get better. These officials are coaching sophomore ball because they need to get better. And it goes all the way up, JV, varsity, all the way down to traveling. I don't know who would want to officiate a traveling basketball game. I have no idea who would say, you know what I want to do on my Saturday and Sunday? I want to go to the Becker Fieldhouse, and I want to ref 6 fifth grade games for, I don't know what they get, $20 a game, and then maybe a voucher to get a hot dog and maybe a walking taco at the concession stand. And you know what would make it really great? As I'm out here in Becker, Minnesota, in this, I think it's a nice big barn field house. They used to have it back in my day, like 5 or 6 courts. I'd love it if I could just get yelled at by these parents that I'm doing a really crappy job. That would be great. I've always, when I've met officials, I've go, why would you do it to yourself? You're not getting rich. You're spending all this time, and you're dealing with idiotic parents probably on a game-by-game basis. But this shortage is real, whether it's health, whether it's behavior, whatever it is, and you don't have games if you don't have refs. It's just a simple fact. We're seeing it. Games getting canceled. Places getting, you know, pulling back a little bit on how they can participate. And I'm trying, I'd love to hear from some parents, because I know I'm going to hear from refs, and I'd love to hear thoughts from administrators on how they're getting around this, how they're trying to make it easier for some people. Because again, high school refs, I mean, I remember back when I was coaching, I mean, probably the highlight of their day was when they were back in the high school refs locker room and the head coach of the home team brought them 4 hot dogs, 4 popcorns, and a couple of Gatorades and said, thanks, guys, we'll see you down the road. And you'd always, you know, hopefully give them a little extra food because they were filling out surveys probably on how this coach was doing because you got evaluated too. So, but I asked this 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago when I talked about the coaches. It's like, before you send that email and get that parent petition going, just think about it for a second. Just breathe for a second. And the same thing when it comes, I love how Dr. Neoff wrote it. The next time you think about yelling at a referee during a high school contest, don't. What the hell's the point? You're driving coaches out of the game, good coaches, by the way, in some cases, and it's a problem that's only going to get worse because the more good coaches you drive out, all that does is create more space for bad coaches who aren't in it for the right reasons. Same deal for officials. You keep driving them out, guess what you're going to get? Crappy officials. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Officiating at the highest level, the National Football League, the National Basketball Association, National Hockey League, Major League Baseball, WNBA. What do they have? They have replay. Why? Because officials make mistakes. Even the best. And they're getting paid ridiculous money. Huge money. So, I know we're never going to convince people because nobody thinks that they're a problem. Nobody goes home at night and says, you know what? I was too hard on my kid's coach today. Or I was too hard on the refs today. Nobody thinks they're the problem. But just asking, again, for a little self-awareness when it comes to this, because put yourself in that official's shoes. They're there. They're learning. They're trying. Maybe they'd love to be a Big Ten ref someday. It's a pretty cool life. I've met a lot of the Big Ten officials. Oh, good for me, traveling back and forth. I flew home from Nebraska with part of the crew that did the Nebraska-Minnesota Gopher football game. Seems like they enjoyed it. They like being a part of it. You know? So, but I'd love a couple of different angles to the phone calls next segment before Ron Johnson joins us, is from administrators, how are you getting around this? Coaches, how are you getting around this? Or is it as big of a problem as you say? Maybe it's not. It seems to be that it is. I'd love to hear from refs who are in it now at any different level or who got out of it or who are still in it, whatever. And I'd love to hear from parents. You don't have to use your real name or your usual yelling at the ref voice, because it's probably not like your normal speaking voice, but I'd love to know what you're thinking. I'd love to know what you think about all of this. And as a youth organization, people that are involved, parents that are involved, I'd love to know how you're addressing it, if in fact you do think it is a problem. 651-989-5326, 1-800-320-5326. Lines are filling up. That's good. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is filling up. That's good. I know I've got a lot of tweets at jgkfan.com, at jgkfan. A lot of ways to get to me on this discussion. Brett's got a story he wants to share. We'll get to all of that when we kick off the second hour. Guardsy in for Barrero. Ron Johnson coming up.
A Ball, the Fan.
You know, people think pace of play is killing baseball. People think injuries and head injuries are killing football and hockey. Maybe it's the lack of officials that are going to kill participation everywhere. That's the topic here. Ron Johnson's going to join about 15 minutes from now. Guardsian for Burrow today. Dan will be back tomorrow. Pat Kessler will join at 5:15. To reset, if you're just joining us here, second hour Cake Show bumper to bumper, there's an officials shortage in youth sports and in high school sports. And some of it is pandemic related, but some of it is the continuation of a trend that we've seen for a while, that officials are sick of it. They wanted to stick around the game. They wanted to help the game. They wanted to maybe help provide opportunities for kids. Maybe some had illusions of being the next Ed Hockley. But more and more are getting out. The reason is predictable. Parents. Email to the Bradshaw and Brian inbox before we take some calls. Booth@KFAN.com. This gentleman's ref soccer for the last 3 years, age 9 to 18 in summers, then varsity and JV soccer all around the metro. This past year, it was almost a surprise when they announced we were going to play and with other stuff canceled for COVID. Stupid me thought players, coaches, parents would be so happy to play that the year would be a lot of fun. Wrong. Parents, coaches, and kids being locked out of most summer activities took their frustration out on refs. I consider myself a B-plus ref, but nobody cares more or hustles more than me. But A-plus refs I worked with, I noticed, were getting the worst of the coaches. And at that point, I figured I needed a break. Several parents after games coming up to us, going to the parking lot, yelling at us. I would always tell them, if you can do better, we need more refs. Working at a hockey rink, being in the stands and watching 9-year-old hockey games and parents yelling at 16-year-old refs was just too much. My number one policy, I would love to see, if you ever get kicked out of a game as a parent for being a Richard, you need to ref a game to be allowed to come back in and watch. This would be the best way to solve problems. Let's take a couple of phone calls. Katie in Big Lake used to umpire. Hi, Katie. You're on the Fan.
Hi, yeah. No, I umped anywhere from in-house up to 16 and under, and the parents are very verbally abusive, and I just couldn't anymore. I loved doing it. I played for years. But coaches and even players, like your email said, players have gotten bad, and I think it's because they see pros get away with it.
Sure.
So they do, too. But I've kicked, you know, even coaches out and the parents, and I've actually worried about going to my car, worrying if they're going to be there.
And how insane does that? How insane is that, Katie? I mean, how insane is that when you think about it?
It's scary, you know. I'm like, I'm getting $40 a game. I'm taking time to rush to get to from Anoka to Becker or down to Maple Grove to umpire 16-year-olds or 14-year-olds. And I know the strike zone. I know it. You're doing the best. I don't have replay. I can't do anything about it if I mess up a call. Sometimes you kind of go, I think I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
But I get worried walking to my car if I've kicked somebody out. And I've kicked a player out in the past for being mouthy. And then I worry about that parent meeting me in the parking lot. And sometimes they have found me in the parking lot. It's very scary. And I took a long break. I was offered high school, and I went, no, they're even worse at that level. So I said no to umping even in the high school level.
Why did you ump really in the first place? Why did you ump in the first place?
Why did I ump? Mm-hmm. I love softball. Mm-hmm. I loved playing it, and I loved working with the younger kids so I can kind of maybe tell the catchers, stop getting so close to the plate. And I just loved being around the game. And the parents and the coaches and the, you know, players have kind of ruined it for me.
I don't think you're alone. Thanks, Katie. I appreciate the phone call. Let's get an admin for a Metro Baseball League. I want all sides because And I'd love, again, to hear from parents. What are you doing? What are you thinking? If you're a crazy parent, call in. I'd love to hear your side. As much as I disagree with you, I'll let you have that forum. Parents that have abusive parents on their team's roster that they're embarrassed by, that maybe they don't sit by, because there's always that too, right? And I've said this before. I said it a month ago whenever I talked about the coaches thing. The best thing my parents ever did for me in my entire life was never let me blame a coach for anything, anything. They might have disagreed with the coach. They might have been annoyed about the coach. They might have thought some things weren't right. But they made damn sure that I exhausted every single thing that was in my control before I even started going down the martyrdom role, that I was somehow being, you know, looked past or screwed or whatever. The second best thing they did is I never had to worry about them screaming at an official and embarrassing me in the crowd that way. Because I got to imagine the kids that are out there watching the game, out there playing the games, at some point have got to be embarrassed by what's going on there. So I want to hear from all sides on this, and we'll get back to it after Ron Johnson as well. Kim is on the fan. Hi, Kim. Thanks for calling.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Good. I'd just like to let you know a couple of things that we in Youth Traveling Baseball in Minnesota are doing to try to help officials. And last summer, due to the pandemic, we had to expand our dugout to go behind the backstop. And we eliminated the fans behind home plate. And that seemed to really help a lot last year.
Is that something you might consider doing the rest of the way moving forward as one of the pandemic changes that might be permanent?
We are going forward with it also this year. I'd like to see it be permanent. And I think a lot of other people would too, especially the officials.
So how do you handle, Kim, when you have an issue with parents? Or when you have, maybe it's a repeat offender, or because you've got to get the umps, right? You've got to get the officials. Some of them probably don't want to come back or do certain games or do certain teams. I mean, what's the protocol there when you've got a situation that might be out of control?
Well, obviously, if there's an ejection that takes place, whether it's a fan, a player, or a coach, they have to serve another suspension. And we can regulate the length of that suspension depending on the severity of the case.
I appreciate the call. I love the idea. We've seen this before. There was a soccer tournament, I think it was Lifetime put together a soccer tournament. And one of the rules, one of the protocols, I don't know if it was COVID or otherwise, regardless, it worked out really well. The parents were barely allowed to see the field. Parents were on the way other side. They couldn't be by the benches. They couldn't be by the coaches. And a lot of that was so that the kids could just go play. That's the whole point of it. That's the whole part of it. And if they're good enough to get a scholarship, guess what? They're going to get one. If they're good enough to go pro, they're going to get one. Very few great athletes have fallen through the cracks because of poor officiating at a seventh grade traveling tournament. I don't have all the analytics, but I'm fairly confident that we haven't missed out on the next Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Carl Anthony Towns or D'Angelo Russell because somebody got a block charge wrong at the St. Cloud tournament because they were hanging out at the red carpet too long the night before because they were 24 years old. I doubt it. Tweet that I liked before I get back to a couple of phone calls. 40-plus years officiating high school and college football. You earn respect. First 5 years, you earned your money. After that, they knew who you were and how you officiated. Did traveling basketball for 15 years. 25 to 30 games isn't. $25 to $30 a game isn't worth it. And that's the thing. The further down you go, just by definition, the refs aren't going to be very good. Guess what? The coaches probably aren't very good. And you know what else? The players aren't very good. They're all learning. We all do traveling. We all do youth. Everybody does it as a means to an end to get better. That's why we're all there. You're not going to get Tim Cheetah at Braemar this weekend, you know, for a 12U baseball tournament. It's not. Now, we got Ken Maurer at one of my high school games because it was the year he had to sit out because of the one of the officiating scandals in the National Basketball Association where refs would get first class tickets booked by the league. They would downgrade them and then pocket the cash. You couldn't do that apparently, so a bunch of them got suspended. Ken Maurer had to go down to high school. He's back in the league now, I think. Called a horrible foul on me against Armstrong that I'm not forgotten to this day. I've got the VHS to prove it. as a 5'9 guy trying to box out a 6'6 guy. It was a perfect box out. Dave Thorson would have loved it. He called a foul on me. I was devastated, but I didn't yell at him. Yeah, he's the ref. A couple of more phone calls on this. Bryce and Mora, you're on the Fan.
Hey, so you kind of just touched on it with the last thing you were talking about the quality of officials and the cycle that we get. But I do high school basketball, and I've done it for 4 years. And I went back to do some youth baseball and basketball. And the level of parental involvement there, I keep screaming at you, is night and day. And what that means is that anyone that wants to be a ref basically has to start at the lower level.
Yes.
And they're getting weeded out immediately, or they're just being forced to be at the higher level where they're low quality. And then the parents are not real pleased with the quality of official there. So either way, you're kind of screwed right now. Either take your beating at the young level and quit, or just suck it up and take your beating at the higher level.
So, Bryce, why do you officiate?
Well, I did coach for a number of years and then had a family, had two young children, and still wanted to be involved in some capacity.
Yep.
And was able to, you know, ref a couple nights a week and still be at home and be involved. I really do enjoy the high school level. I don't know if people have slightly more realistic expectations at that point than the youth level or what it is, but I've had overall positive experience there compared to the youth one.
So you're not doing it. You're not, you mentioned you have a couple of kids. Their 529 college savings plans aren't getting filled up with your officiating money. You're not doing it to become rich and famous, correct?
Well, you know, maybe they'll be able to pay for a week or two of college.
Depending on where they go. I appreciate the call and the thoughts, Bryce. Thank you. Let's get to Joe in Medina. You're on the Fan. Hi, Joe.
Oh, hey, let me take you off speaker.
Thank you. That'd be great. It'd be great for all of us. You used to umpire. Uh-oh. Did you put us on mute? You're there?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I got you. Go ahead. You used to umpire, it says on the screen. No problem.
I did used to umpire. I guess a short background. I am 47. I went to Osseo, so I'm a little older than you, but grew up in the same scene, northwest suburbs. I umpired from, I started in high school through college, like you. I maybe a half a dozen majors in a few different schools. Yeah, I'm a long time listener.
Yeah.
And so I'm bringing it from that perspective. I also then traveled with a job for years and started my family late in life. So I have kids that are in third grade and kindergarten. So we're just getting into the scene, and I coached for the first time this year. I coached third grade basketball at Orono of all things.
Yep.
And, so my perspective, this is the story I always told people. I would have rather, and I umpired from the Crystal Frolics, like prestigious back in the day, big, you know, A club teams, a lot out at Standing Room Only in Andover, where you're talking about a pinwheel with four fields and a bar in the middle of
yeah,
it. And guys
yeah.
Guys like lumberjacks.
Yeah, I've been out there.
The ball.
Yep.
Right. And I used to play out there and love it.
Uh-huh.
I was 21st birthday out there playing ball. So I was spit on out there. I've been sworn at. I've been whatever. I would rather deal with those guys all day, every day, than a 12 and under girls softball team. And I had to kick a parent out one time at, I think it was Clyde Andrews Field. And that was the thing. That was what did it for me and decided I wasn't taking it to the next level. And umpiring wasn't worth it. And I loved it as a job. And it was a great paying job when I was young. But there's a mom just screaming, and I'm telling you that it was a 3-foot call. Like, it was not even close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an umpire, every umpire tells you that. You know if you might have missed one. You always know if you might have missed it, right? But you're sure most of the time. And this wasn't even close, and she just won't let it go and won't let it go. Her daughter is crying on the sidelines. And I finally had to turn, and I said, I'm sorry, ma'am. You're going to have to stop talking or you're going to have to leave the park.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the whole team there. And she said, I pay my taxes, and starts going to this whole rant.
Yeah.
And how embarrassing for her children. Right.
Yeah.
And then I just looked and I said to the coaches, I don't know what else to tell you. You forfeit if she doesn't leave. So you guys can deal with getting her off the property. I'm not going to physically do it.
Yeah.
You know,
and you think, is that the way to do it? I mean, because there's got to be, I think that's one of the problems is I think everybody's aware, every team, not every team, but certainly some teams have that parent or have that group. And it's a lot of times it might be somebody that you've been friends with for 10 years, because as you know,
Yep. All of my parents' friends were when I was in high school.
100%.
All my buddies' friends that we've been traveling together for eight, 9 years, right? We've been growing up together. And it's hard. I think it takes a bold group. The best groups have that person. You know, Pete Najarian talks about his dad all the time. When the neighborhood parents would get loud about something, it was Dr. Najarian that would say, well, this is what we're doing and this is why, and everybody would fall in line. It's hard to do that, though, right?
Oh, completely. I mean, you know, trying to mingle that with being like third grade. Now you get into the other side, and I see it. Yeah, how do you deal with it? I do think keeping it in-house helps. You have to kind of force some accountability on the parents in the league.
Yep.
But I would say, like, you look at it, and I'm trying to figure it out. I was into every sport, right? And it's all we had, and you watched every major event, every men's tennis, women's tennis, everything, right? Golf, all of it. But now you've got all these things. And I've got a kid who doesn't want to watch sports but likes to play sports. And it's fine, and I don't want to force him into things, but I also want him to be competitive. And watching the other coaches and everybody try and balance that, it is. It's a difficult thing to even figure out where you should be.
I appreciate the call, Joe. Thank you for the thoughts. I want to sneak one more in here before we go, and we might get back to this a little bit later in the show as well. Officiating guy, I mean, who better to talk to about this than officiating guy, longtime listener and friend of the station. Thanks for calling in.
No problem, Grizzy. Hey, the first thing I want to say is I want to pass along a message to your first caller, that Kim.
Yeah.
If she was offered a chance to work high school ball and softball, get back into it. It's much different than the youth level.
Yeah, that was Katie. Yeah, Katie from Big Lake.
Katie,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
So if Katie in Big Lake is listening, maybe officiating guy says take another shot at it.
Absolutely. Well, especially if you're going to move up to the high school level. And I agree with your last caller that on the youth level, these parents are all nuts.
I laugh, I don't mean to laugh, but I hear you.
Well, a couple of things is that by the time you get into high school, one, the officiating is usually better. You've got people who have been doing it more. But number two, you've weeded out a lot of the bad seed parents, or the parents start to understand to just shut up and let them play.
Yep.
You know, they become much less of a problem. And you know, it's also kind of due to today's generation of kids. You know, I think they're just made differently. You know, I started umpiring and officiating in my 20s.
Yep.
Kids these days aren't made that way, where they're willing to take some of that criticism. You've got to be, you know, you've got to be awfully thick-skinned and learn to, as I tell people, don't stand on me, don't stand on my right side when somebody's yelling at my left side, because it's coming out that ear faster than it goes in the first one.
I appreciate the phone call, officiating guy, and the thoughts. I'll add one final point before we break and get to Ron Johnson and try to give away a grand in your hand. For the most part, to the parents that are screaming at officials on a game-by-game basis, or even screaming at the coach on a game-by-game basis, I don't know what the percentage is. Again, I don't have the analytics on it, but I promise you, more often than not, the person you're hurting the most is your own kid, which I know is not your intent, which I know is not what you're trying to do. I know the investment that you have in that kid, in that child, in the development, financially, time-wise, I get it. I understand all of it. I lived it. I'm probably going to live it with my kids now. But when you blame the coach for everything, to talk about my topic from a month ago, and give them that out, that's hurting them. And when you are screaming and yelling 3 seconds, and get them off, and all those things, every ref buzzword you could possibly do, the only person you're embarrassing besides yourself is your kid, who's got enough to going on as a 7th, 8th, 9th grader trying to figure out where they fit in on the team, where they fit in with their teammates, where they fit in with their own development, where the school, the boyfriends and girlfriends. They've got enough to worry about, as opposed to whether or not mom or dad is going to embarrass them at the MYSHL state tournament at the Gangelhoff Center in Concordia. And if I've rattled off gyms from all over the state of Minnesota, it's because I've been to all of them. Every tournament you're going to this spring, I've been there. Every tournament you're going to in the summer, I've been there. I've been to all of them. I know all the vibes. And I promise you, the kids are noticing, and the kids are watching, and the kids are the ones you're hurting when you're yelling at the ref that it's a 3-second call. You want to put a grand in somebody's hand?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
The fan is trying to put a grand in your hand with the National Cash Contest. Head to KFAN.com, enter the keyword pay, that is pay, for your shot to win more bumper to bumper.
Yo app now.
That podcast with Meatsauce and Lieber is pretty good. I listened to a good stretch of their mock draft one this morning. It's on the Power Trip After Party podcast channel of your iHeartRadio app. Welcome back, 651 Carpet Studios. Guards Ian for Barrero today. Dan will be back tomorrow. Marty Wexler III will join at 3:15 tomorrow. 3:15 tomorrow. Ben Lieber will also join as we get you ready for draft coverage. Right now on the Connecticut Water Systems hotline is my guy, Ron Johnson. Follow him at 3RonJohnson on all Instagram and Twitter channels. He's been doing a ton of work with the Vikings and VEN draft-related. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Can't complain. Just got my times mixed up, so I'm about to take my daughter to gymnastics in a minute, but that's about it.
Well, you know, we can call you back. I mean, family first, father first. You're good?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just putting in a car and keep talking.
All right, that sounds good. You're not on a Stairmaster this time around. I think the last time we talked, you were doing, you did about 90 flights on a Stairmaster. That turned out very funny on Cake Show. You've done a bunch. You've done a bunch of work on this draft, obviously. Let's just start broad. 14th pick tomorrow night. Your gut tells you the Vikings do what?
Well, if Meat Sauce was still playing, I would say take Meat Sauce as an offensive guard. But because he retired, my take is, honestly, it keeps changing. I had Darrishaw, he was my guy from the start. Kind of, you know, I liked the size, 6'5", 322. Long arms. His one knock was his groin. He had a groin injury early on, and he had surgery, but he was ready to go for his pro day, unlike some other guys that have had, you know, pre-draft surgeries or whatever, and then they're not ready to go until after training camp or training camp. This kid says he's ready to go for OTAs. So I like him. I like his size. I like, you know, the fact that he's not a 360-pound tackle, but he looks like, you know, he looks like Trent Williams, but he's smaller. And so I think that's a positive when you think about a left tackle, a guy that's supposed to be kind of your anchor, a guy that's going to keep Kirk Cousins' backside kind of, you know, protected. I know there's a kid from Rashawn Slater from Northwestern out there.
Yep.
At 308, it just seems like we're getting, you know, Brian O'Neill 2.0. You know, we already have a smaller, slender tackle. Why get another one when you kind of need a role grader, a bigger, stronger guy? Like, Darrishaw overpowers people. When he puts his hands on guys, if you watch, there's some tape out there of him, you know, in games where he's just, I mean, I think it was Duke, and Duke sucks, we know that. But, I mean, he just absolutely Michael Orr the kid, you know, just, you know, drove him down the field, kind of pancaked him. So he's a physical. He's like his personality, too. I liked him. I watched him on with Nate Burleson and Kay Adams, and he is, like, kind of funny. Like, not really funny, you know, but, like,
kind of
he's
funny.
Willing to like take, yeah, he's willing to take jokes, and I think that's important when you look at that offensive lineman room they already have set. You know, those guys kind of have a decent personality. They all kind of get along and joke around. You want a kid who's going to come in, and I think the question was, if you had to be a dog or a cat, which one would you want to be? And he said both. I take 50-50 because cats, you know, are agile and this, but dogs are always ready to attack. And so, you know, a guy that can actually sit there and do that versus like, really, like, being serious, like, really, I don't care about dogs and cats. I want to play football. Yeah. You know, like, he's a guy that seems like he would fit in here in Minnesota.
Pro Football Focus, by the way, on Christian Darrishaw, had him as the highest Pro Football Focus grade of any tackle in the Power 5 in 2020. 2020, of course, was weird. Some players opted out, including Rashawn Slater, who's probably not going to be there when the Vikings pick at 14. Does it have to be, in your mind, an offensive lineman at 14? Or is there a scenario you see where it can be another position? There's going to be some defensive players available because of what's happening in front of the Vikings with the receivers, Pitts as, you know, as the tight end, and obviously the quarterback. So possibility of a decent defensive player at 14 is probably going to present itself there. Do you feel like this is the time, the year, that they do, though, need to address the offensive line in a big way?
I think so. I think you look at years past where we're always like, can he play guard? You know, can he play center? Can he play tackle? this is the year where I think he can. You know, like he, this is the year you go get a guy that can play guard, tackle, one of the two. Because, I mean, I think we keep forgetting, and I personally forgot about Ezra Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ezra Cleveland was a tackle they drafted, and then all of a sudden they moved him to guard because, you know, the whole elf line situation didn't really work out, which I wish it would have, but it didn't. So there's always the Ezra Cleveland, which, again, he's not a big time. I'm a lift weights on social media, post it so you can see how big I am now. So we really don't know how much he's grown this offseason, where he possibly could be, you know, the 315, 320, you know, tackle that's kind of filled out over the offseason, got that grown man diet and strength going that we just weren't aware of that he was capable of doing. So, you know, there's a lot of factors there, too, that the Vikings know. You know, we don't know. There's always insider things that we don't even think about. You know, we're all looking at the shiny new toy of here's a new offensive tackle. But we sometimes forget, you know, Cleveland's been in the system. He understands the offense. So if it is a Brian O'Neill to left tackle and then Ezra Cleveland to right tackle, and then you draft like Vera Tucker who can play tackle or guard,
yep.
And then you get a guy in there where, you know, if Ezra is better for you at if Ezra Cleveland is better for you at guard, you put Vera Shaw at tackle, and then vice versa. If one's better than the other, but now you come into camp with a ton of kind of options and guys that you can mismatch and see who fits better where. You have more flexibility where Darashaw, he's not going to guard. I mean, that kid is
right.
A humongous tackle. And so I think that's a decision. And what people forget too is when scouts and coaches sit in the war room, and even beforehand, when they're sitting there trying to figure out, well, who do I draft? Who do we like? You look at guys that fit your scheme.
I go off the floor. Guys.
What?
And, can you hear me?
I got you now, yeah. As you switch to the hands free, I got you now. Let's do a quick checklist.
Yeah, sorry.
Does your daughter have the water bottle?
She has the water. Oh, you can hear that.
Yeah. Do you have your seatbelt on?
Yeah, she has the water bottle. She's got the booster seat. She's got the leotard on.
All right.
Got the Crocs.
Your seatbelt good? Your hands-free good? Everything good for you before you drive her to gymnastics?
Good to go.
We're talking with Ron Johnson, at 3RonJohnson on Twitter, on Insta. I hear him all over the place on the Fan during the football season, Minnesota Vikings fan line. You see him on Fox 9 all the time. See him on the Vikings Entertainment Network. See him on social media, like I mentioned. If a quarterback falls, let's just say it is let's just say whoever it is, whether it's Justin Fields, whether it is NDSU guy. I hope Mac Jones doesn't fall. I hope San Francisco takes him at 3 because I'm not a huge Mac Jones fan. If there's a quarterback there at 14 for your Minnesota Vikings, what do they do?
If it's Trey Lance or Justin Fields, I say take them. The reason I say that is because those two guys can throw, but they also can move, and I think that's been one of the inabilities at times. Yes, we know Kirk Cousins, when you give him some design run plays, he can get it done. But he doesn't scare anybody, where we've seen a lot of teams mention that, you know, as they're heading to play the Vikings, whether it's a playoff game or not, they're like, you know, our goal, like Tampa Bay said, you know, our goal, keep him in the pocket, you know, let's let him throw. And that's not always great when you hear that versus, you know, Lamar Jackson. It's like, do not let him out of the pocket. You know, let's make sure, you know, this guy can do this Kirk Cousins, if he starts running, we're not worried. You know, and then Lamar Jackson's opposite is like, hey, keep this kid in the pocket, because if he's outside the pocket, it's over for you. And I think that's the thing where teams can blitz the Vikings with Kirk, and the first thought is not to run. You know, you blitz Lamar Jackson, you take a wrong angle, good night. You know, same with Justin Fields. You know, he didn't run a ton at Ohio State, but, you know, clearly running a 4.44, he can run when he has to. And I think if he's there, you'd be dumb not to take him. Or play that game with the Patriots, who are right behind you, who I'm guessing they want a quarterback as well. And a lot of mocks have them taking whoever falls to them. So if one of the top guys like Trey Lance or Fields is there, you call Belichick and you ask his dog, can I speak to Bill? And then, you know, you just try to play that game with him. Like, hey, if we draft one of these quarterbacks, are you willing to take him from us and draft our guy after? And then, you know, we'll take your second round or your third round or whatever, and we'll give you, you know, our sixth and seventh or something. You know, it's value in that. And so when you look at all these mocks and all these possible scenarios, you know, like even the Cardinals at 16, I mean, there's a lot of guys the Vikings can trade back with
if they feel like, you know, all five of the guys we like are still on the board, let's go get a second round pick, then you do it. But if a quarterback is there and you really think this is your future, you get them. If not, I would not waste that pick because, as we know with the Vikings, you know, front office, I think, honestly, I think if there is two more seasons of 7-10, mm-hmm. now we have 17 games, mm-hmm. I don't think they're here. You know, 7-10 the next 2 years is not going to get it done under Kirk Cousins. And so you would hope that there's a plan to say, you know what, instead of having to get a brand new quarterback when Kirk's done, hope in 2 years there's a top guy coming out the draft and we're just that bad when we're in the top five, let's play that game. And that's more of an owner because Rick is like, well, if we play that game and we're trying to be in the top five, 9 times out of 10, me and Zim aren't here. So it's a cat and mouse of owner versus GM. Who do you want? You know, I don't see the Wilfs as like the Jerry Joneses, the Snyders, you know, where they kind of stick their chest out and say, you take who I say you take or you're done.
No, they're not like that.
No, they let the GM and the coach do what they were hired to do, which is put a great team together and then also put capital together for the future. And I think that's what they've done thus far.
You were a receiver. You follow the receivers. I know you've watched a lot of these receivers for your work leading up into the draft, including Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida that's, you know, probably going to go early, you know, 4 or 5, depending on who you ask. What do you make of this receiver class? What stands out about this receiver class? And we're going to get to Bateman in a minute, so maybe even hold off on him. But the guys expected to go in the top 10, the Jamar Chases, the Devontae Smiths, and the Jalen Waddles. What stands out?
Yeah, so the Vikings, we did a show. You can probably go to Vikings.com and see it. Me and Gabe Henderson broke down the receivers of this draft for the Vikings. And, you know, those are the names, Jamar Chase, Waddle. We also looked at Kadarius Toney, Rondale Moore.
Yep.
When you look at Jamar Chase, I mean, you got to look at this. Terrence Marshall Jr., he's probably going to be a first-round pick from LSU. Jamar Chase, definitely a first-round pick. Jefferson, first-round pick. Joe Burrow honestly did not have that much to do. When you have three guys that are just that good and that open, you really are like, I mean, granted, yes, Joe Burrow made some great throws, but those receivers were wide open. You give those three to Tanner Morgan, Tanner Morgan's a Heisman winner. You know, like that's how I feel about those three receivers. I'm not saying Joe Burrow's not good because you look at what he did with the Bengals. He was headed for a great season before he, you know, tore his ACL, but that's what you're getting out of those receivers. And a guy like Jamar Chase, he's just as good as Justin Jefferson, if not better, because he's a little bit bigger. You know, he gives you a little bit more like strength to his game where Justin's more finesse. And then you go back down to Waddle. I personally, Devonta Smith, I like him. I think you can put him inside, outside. He's a crafty guy that has a lot of moves to his game.
Does it bother you that he's 5'1" and 120? Because there's a lot of people that are saying, well, he's really good, and obviously he won the Heisman. He had a great season, but the size seems to be what people are knocking him for. It doesn't bother me, but I didn't play in the league.
DeSean Jackson was 171, and that's probably 171 with a 5-pound weight in his pocket. And trust me, guys do weird stuff at the draft or the combine, like drink a gallon. Like Kelly Campbell came to the Vikings. He drank a gallon of water before he got on the scale to try to be heavier.
Kelly Cam. I remember him well.
Yep. You know, what's his name? The running back for the Vikings, he wore a Wizinator to be heavier when he got on the scale, you know. So they're like, is that a banana? No, that's all me.
Careful.
But, you know, like that's the thing when you think about weight. Who cares? Look at the DBs he played against. He wasn't playing against, you know, some slaps. He was playing against some of the top DBs in the country, you know, when you're in Alabama, not just in practice, but in games too, you know. And so I personally think he'll be fine. I think you look at Jerry Jeudy, you look at Henry Ruggs, those guys made it through a season just fine with their weight. I honestly, Waddle to me is not, I don't think he's up there personally. I think, you know, he benefited from system of Sarkisian just, you know, putting those guys in absolute, you know, juggernaut positions when you motion shift. And you look at every possible change and shift in the system where, okay, this safety's down, boom, here's your throw, which I think that's what Mac Jones benefited from. I don't know if Mac Jones is a true NFL, like, star. I think he's a serviceable quarterback. You know, I feel like he's going to be another, you know, I don't know. He's just, like, I don't think he's that guy that they think he is. But those receivers, to me, all jump off the charts. Waddle, I'm not sold on him. I would take Terrence Marshall Jr. personally from LSU over Waddle for the simple fact that he's 6'4".
How do Vikings fans handle it if Rashad Bateman is drafted by the Green Bay Packers?
I don't think Vikings fans care because they don't even like watch Gopher football. If you could put 70,000 Vikings fans in the stadium and you can't get 55,000 of those same guys in the Gopher stadium, I truly believe, I mean, you got some Vikings fans that are Badger fans. You know, that's how brainwashed and weird some of these people are up here. And so when you think about that, I think Vikings fans will be fine. I think some true Gopher.
Yeah, I'm not going to like it. I'm just going to flat out tell you. I'm preparing myself for it. I'm not going to like it.
Yeah, you're a true one. You're a true
I'm a real one.
Vikings. You know, I think people would be upset the Packers got him for the simple fact that they're like, man, he was in our backyard. Why didn't we get him? But again, Rashad will be there at 14. So you can't do it. And then when he goes to the Packers and he has a great year with Rodgers, then of course everybody's going to play that game of, man, I wish the Vikings.
Well, he's going to be good. I mean, that's the problem. Most of it is I know what a hell of a player he is. And people, I think it was Mel Kiper the other day. I was listening to one of his podcasts and they were talking about how he didn't have, you know, he had a step back from a year ago. It's like, okay, it's like that's to me the most interesting thing is how people are going to get nicked and dinged for 2020 when some guys didn't play. Some guys played one game. Some guys played four games. Some guys got COVID, couldn't play. In Rashad's case, he got COVID last summer, lost 10 pounds, wasn't really planning on playing, then played, then opted out. Like, to me, 2020 should be a wash on Rashad. Look at 2019 and you'll see everything you need to see.
Yeah, we know he's legit. We know he's good. We know he ran the 4.3, so that the whole is he fast is out of the question now. His size and his speed, his ability to catch at the catch point, so the highest point of the ball, he goes after it. You don't see him kind of wait on the ball. I think that's one of the big positives of the game. And then PJ did a ton of putting him in the slot, and we saw Mama Bateman on Twitter. I know you probably did as well. She wasn't real happy with some of the offensive play calls when her baby was in the slot and just kept running little digs and outs. And she's like, really? That's all we're going to do? Do something else other than the slant. Cause yeah. I saw her tweet that.
Yeah.
Well, what that did for him and Mom probably going to thank PJ later or Matt Simon later. That showed scouts he can play in the slot because yep. A lot of times when you're 6'1", 6'2", people automatically just say X or Z. That's it. Now the fact that he played most of the season in the slot, you know, picking up the blitz, you know, hot route guy, you know, running the cross, the digs, the inside, you know, because you have a two-way go a lot of times, so you have to read, is the guy outside, is the guy inside, or is he over the top, and they give you a two- or three-way go on the route. He did all that this season, so I think that's the key with when you're looking at what, you know, they did with him. That I saw a ton of scouts now. That's on his draft, you know, sheet.
Right.
But if you go back to, like, 2018, it doesn't say that. It says rangy, catch radius, you know, tall or lanky, whatever. Now it's saying, oh, can play in the slot and can play outside. He can do both for everybody. And so, you know, I think he should be thanking them. Even though it was monotonous, he should be thanking them for that.
I appreciate you, man. Get everybody to gymnastics. Enjoy the draft. And hopefully we will see you soon.
I will. You know, over here, classic gymnastics. You know, I used to be able to do backflips. I don't know if I can do them anymore, though.
No, be careful. Even though you did that, you're doing like the, you know, 5 out of 7 days a week vegan diet, right? You probably could do that now.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm down to 232. You know, Profile by Sanford, I tried to get with them, but they, you know, they were like, all their energy was into a guy named Justin, they told me. So I was like,
yeah,
I don't worry
they needed
about it.
You know, to get me to drop 50, they needed it. They needed all hands on deck for me, man. They figured you'd be good on your own, and they were right. I needed the support. They needed the support. I hope to see you soon, man. I appreciate you. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
That is Ron Johnson. Follow him at 3RonJohnson on Twitter and on Instagram. All the Gopher stuff, all the Viking stuff, all the workout stuff, everything you need to know at 3RonJohnson. We'll clean up some emails from our earlier discussion on the ref and umpire shortage that's plaguing youth sports. Also get you caught up on a couple of newsy items, including Ted Bridgewater on the move. Where is he going? And how does it affect the draft? We'll talk about
On the Fan.
Back quick segment here. We'll run through some headlines and get back to a Vikings draft discussion at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guardian for Barrero today in the 651 Carpet Studios. Brett Blakemore here as well. Pat Kessler is going to join at 5:15. I just got this email to the Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth@kfan.com. Been coming in the last hour or so, so we'll make another blanket announcement. We did have Marty Wexler III scheduled for 3:55 today on a Wexler Wednesday. We've been promoting that for a couple of days. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, every draft there's some surprises. There's draft day falls, there's draft, some guys move up, some guys move down. There's always a wild card, and today was the fact that Dan wasn't able to host today. He's coming back tomorrow. So out of respect for the process and the segment, I asked Marty Wexler III if he would join Dan tomorrow, because the relationship is really between those two. It predates me. And like, I've only interviewed Bill Walton one time in the 11 years that we've done the bit. Even though I go to the Final Four every year, like, the relationship is with Dan. Dan needs to do the interview. Same thing with Marty Wexler III. So everybody that was wondering, where's Marty? He will be tomorrow at 3:15. Ben Lieber will be tomorrow at 4:55. He's got a bunch of Vikings duties tomorrow and draft duties for us immediately following Bumper to Bumper. So that's what we've got. We started a bit a couple of months ago in the National Football League that I want to continue here, because somebody else has just hopped on.
Hopping on the NFL quarterback carousel.
I mean, it was Carson Wentz, it was Jared Goff, it was Sam Bradford, right? People were flying all over the place. I rode a carousel yesterday at Nickelodeon Universe with my two kids. It was great. Besides my two-year-old's meltdown because she didn't get to ride on the right animal that she wanted to, which completely wasted her first trip on the carousel. By the time she got settled on the cat that had the fish in its mouth, which is my favorite at Nickelodeon Universe, the ride was over. So the 6 points just down the drain. But the quarterback carousel got another rider today, and it's our former guy, former Pro Bowl quarterback Ted Bridgewater, is reuniting with George Payton. He's on his way to the Denver Broncos. The Carolina Panthers traded him today in exchange for a sixth-round pick. The Panthers will pay $7 million to Teddy, while the Broncos will pay him $3 million. And George Payton says in a statement, acquiring Teddy Bridgewater adds competition, experience, and a strong veteran presence to our quarterback room. He's a talented player and leader who's had success in this league in a number of different situations. Now, here is the interesting question, and it is followed up immediately in this Adam Schefter and ESPN story. With the Denver Broncos at pick 9, does that take them out of a quarterback spot? Or does that take them out of a quarterback sweepstakes? Would they take a quarterback at 9 if one should fall to them? Source tells Schefty, not necessarily, because the assumption is they've got Drew Locke, even though he's not very good, right? They've got a really good defense. They've got a starting quarterback. They clearly need an upgrade at some point over Drew Locke in some regard. Is Teddy Bridgewater that upgrade? George Payton not flat out saying it, saying he's being brought in to compete. Is it true that they're now out of the quarterback market at 9? Maybe they figured, we're not going to get the guy we like at 9. We're not interested in anybody at 9, so let's get a different person in here to either compete with Locke or just have him take the job, and that would be Teddy, who's obviously had a few moments. Didn't exactly light the world on fire in Carolina. 15 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, and the Panthers give him up for a sixth-round pick. I think that tells you a lot about their intentions for this draft. And obviously they just acquired Darnold, right? That was earlier on the quarterback carousel. So Teddy Bridgewater on the move again. What does that do in terms of the Denver Broncos? It matters for the Vikings because we're trying to figure out exactly what's happening in front of the Vikings. Are they going to stick on offense? Are they going to get they've got decent wide receivers, if I remember correctly. Their defense is very good. What are the rest of their needs, and how does that factor in to what the Vikings are going to do at 14? Only time will tell. We'll get back on schedule and kick off the 5 o'clock hour, reviewing what we opened the show with. It's a bizarro world right now in the Minnesota sports world. We'll also review a thing or two that Rick Spielman had to say yesterday and react to it, specifically as it pertains to trading up or trading down. Which way do I think is more likely, particularly early in the draft? We'll talk about that before Pat Kessler makes his weekly appearance at
The Fan.
The Vikings Draft Happy Hour is presented by Miller Lite. It kicks off tomorrow, day one of the NFL Draft at 5:30. Watch the live-streamed event as you interact and celebrate with your favorite current and former Vikings players, analysts, and influencers. The Vikings and Miller Lite will also provide draft prize packs to be given away throughout. Find out more at Vikings.com. We'll see you tomorrow for a happy hour, thanks to Miller Lite.
Man, we got a lot going on for Vikings draft tomorrow night.
Something's going on tomorrow for sure.
We've had a lot of great moments in Vikings draft history. Even in the 18 years that I've worked here, everybody remembers when we missed the pick and ended up with Kevin Williams, and PA's role in that was firing up the crowd for Terrell Suggs. Had the entire place, I think it was out at Winter Park, had the entire place chanting Suggs' name during the commercial break. They come back, we missed the pick, Suggs gets drafted, and Mike Tice has to come out and do okay, calm down. We've moved to U.S. Bank Stadium, which is great. There's a lot of good draft night memories. One of my favorites was when we had like pick 28 or 29, and we ended up trading back into the second round. So we waited all night till the end of the night to make the pick, and then ended up trading back. Mm. And everybody was devastated. Everybody was down. So there's been some good moments, and even though we're not going to be there with thousands of Vikings rubes in person, we will be there in spirit. And looking forward to the coverage tomorrow. Our guys do a great job. PA and Charch and Lieber and everybody involved do an awesome job. And it's one of the best weekends of the year here on The Fan. Meat Sauce and Nordo are doing a bunch of stuff. And Lieber's going to join us tomorrow at 5. Marty Wexler III is going to be at 3:15. Rick Spielman talked NFL draft yesterday, his usual yearly 2 days before the draft deal. I want to play a couple of things that he had to say that we didn't quite get to yesterday. Maybe talk about what he's thinking or how he's thinking. First of all, I love this one when it comes to maybe drafting a quarterback.
I will just say this, that there's no position that is off limits going into this draft. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, that's all we need to know. But they've got a million picks, as they usually do. 14th overall, no second rounder, 2 in the 3rd, and 4 in the 4th, and then, you know, a smattering in the 5th, 6th, and 7th. The biggest key, obviously, offensive line, we know that. Where are they going to get that guy? The question, I believe, is how many starters do they need from the offensive line in this draft?
We'll see. Like I said, we think it's a pretty deep draft class. Just like every position, I think there's quality throughout this draft, through the first 3 rounds and maybe, you know, into the 4th round on getting some potential starters for us up front, or at least creating competition. We spend a lot of time and listen to the coaches on scheme fit. We want to make sure they're a culture fit. But there's some guys that we don't feel are scheme fits that are very good players and going to be very successful in the league. So we try to marry up, you know, what we see them as a football player, and we grade them accordingly. But we do have to, you know, talk through it. I think our guys in the room have a pretty good feel of who the coaches are going to like or not like from a schematic fit. I think the other thing, too, is when you add in all the Zoom interviews and, you know, getting to feel this player is not only intelligent, how quickly he's going to be able to pick up the system, but feel that there is a lot of quality offensive linemen throughout this draft.
It's something that's been a trend since I started kind of following it the last month or so, that there's 6 or 7 specifically tackles in the top 100 picks or so. So my view has kind of evolved. And I've really got two answers when it comes to what the Vikings should do at 14, what I hope that they're going to do at 14. Said it earlier in the show, and we're going to talk about trading up and trading back here in a minute and hear what Spielman had to say about that. I'm completely off of drafting a quarterback should one fall, if it's Trey Lance or Justin Fields. Certainly if it's Mac Jones, although maybe he'd be perfect for this offense because people compare him to Kirk Cousins, and that's why people think Shanahan might like him. I don't know. I'm off of that. I know Sean Salisbury told Barrero on Sunday Sermons he would absolutely take Trey Lance. I get why he's saying that. I'm trying to get this team good for this year. I think if you look at what they've done this offseason, how they've tried to reload the defense, including guys that have been, you know, that were COVID opt-outs with Michael Pierce, guys that were injured in Kendricks and Barr, what they did in free agency with Tomlinson, with the linebacker, with Patrick Peterson. They obviously think they're closer than some might think. They think they're acting as if they feel like they can be pretty good this year. So to me, just taking a quarterback at 14 flies in the face of all of that. To me, that malpractice might have been a strong word that I used earlier, but it's not much further. I wouldn't soften it too much, unless my only caveat is if they find a way to get back into the second round and draft an offensive lineman. The more I think about it, the more I hope that they settle is not the right word either, but get in on an offensive lineman. It doesn't look like, you know, the top 2 are going to be there. Slater's probably not going to be there. Penei Sewell's probably not going to be there. Do you like Christian Darrisaw? Virginia Tech. Pro Football Focus does. Highest grade of any tackle in the Power 5 in 2020. Not a single blip on his radar from start to finish. Virginia Tech plays some people now, too. They're in the ACC. They've got the North Carolinas. They've got the Clemsons. This past year, they had the Notre Dames. 315 pounds, 6'5", good size, allowed all of six pressures over the entire season. Didn't allow a single sack or hit. That's important for a quarterback that needs things to be really, really perfect. So I think I would be fine with him at 14. I think I would be fine with the kid from USC, Elijah Vera Tucker. Basically the same size, 6'4", 315. Doesn't grade out as well as Darrisaw, but can also play a couple of different positions. Basically can play right tackle, right guard, left tackle, left guard, if you talk to the analysts. I like that versatility. So I'm mostly settling on, I want them to, depending again, we have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow, but I'd be perfectly comfortable if they took one of those two guys early. Even if you think one of those guys might be available a little bit later, I'm very comfortable taking one of those two guys. I'm also comfortable trading down because my emphasis is I would love to get the second round pick back. And I know Spielman thinks he has some ammo. In fact, let's play that soundbite next. The question was about trading up, trading back. Are you getting calls? Are you taking calls? Are you making calls? What's going on there in terms of that? Let me find trading up or trading back. That's how I have it labeled.
We're at 14 right now. So I think, you know, a lot of people will see how the draft board is unfolding as the players come off. Every time I've been involved in the drafts I've been involved in, most of the time the trade talks, you can talk to people this time of year, but it doesn't, or this time right before the draft, but it usually doesn't mean anything. A lot of people are going to wait and see what players are on their draft board and if they're willing to move up or down. We started our process of going through scenarios. We've looked at scenarios on if a specific player was falling in the top 10. Do we go up and get that player? Rob Brzezinski and Ryan Munnins will be handling the trades this year. And so we're going through what the potential cost of that would be. We're also looking at if we are at 14 and if the board there, we have two or three players that are still, we think, can get, like we've done in the past, trading back, picking up some more draft capital. So we have the flexibility to move it up and down through the draft. But to say, you know, I don't take it very serious at this time on people, hey, if our guy's there, are you willing to trade back? Or, you know, we haven't been really making any active calls on trying to trade up either. I think a lot of that evolves as the draft process goes on Thursday and throughout the draft, depending on who's on the board and how teams covet players.
Unless things go crazy and Penei Sewell, for example, it's pick 8 or 9 and he hasn't been drafted yet, I can't imagine the Vikings trading up. Meatsauce and I talked about it on Sunday. I don't think they have enough to trade up in the first round. I mentioned the Jimmy Johnson draft chart, which for the first time I really examined. Have you ever looked at the Jimmy Johnson draft chart? It's interesting. It's on Pro Football Reference. For reference, no pun intended or no redundancy intended, the value of Jacksonville's number one pick, Brett, is 3,000 points.
Yep.
That's the value. The Vikings at pick 14, their value is 1,100 points. Their next draft pick value is 200. As you can imagine, the value goes down. And it goes down, I would say, quite dramatically. Like, I don't think the prices necessarily match up when you think about the value of different players that you can get, certainly at different positions. But it's an interesting exercise to kind of look at this thing. I see no world where they can move up and feel good about it and actually still maintain, first of all, high picks next year, because I think that would almost have to be a part of it, given your lack of a second round pick this year, and you know, the fact that you just have 14. Maybe you're able to swap and, you know, give a first round next year and a couple of third. I don't know.
Well, this goes to the same thing I've been hearing all week, is quantity versus quality in the draft, right? And I've heard Saucy
say, well, I would like a change and go for more quality instead of more quantity.
I agree
Spielman,
totally.
Well, Spielman is more of a, I want quantity, I want draft capital, we want to have as many swings as possible, but,
yep.
You know, how many of those fourth, fifth, sixth rounds are really swings in the first place?
35 draft day trades since 2012, Courtney Cronin wrote today. That's tied for the most in the NFL in that span. And it's been wild. I mean, in 2020, they had 12 selections to begin with, came away with 15, the most by any team since the draft switched to a seven-round format in 1994. He's done both. He's traded up. He's traded down. He's moved down one spot. He's moved out of the first round. He's moved back into the first round. He's wild. It's entertaining as hell. I like it. And I like, you know, some years, you know, he's been super aggressive to go back up and get Teddy Bridgewater, to go back up and get Cordarrelle Patterson. They don't always work out, but I like the aggressiveness. He's also been passive at times, if you want to call moving back down passive. The depth in this draft seems to be mostly offensively. When you talk about quarterbacks, number one, there's five or six guys that might go in the top three rounds. There's a million wide receivers, and there's a million tackles, apparently. And by a million, I mean six or seven guys that you can feel good about. From everybody I've read and listened to in the last month, that kind of cuts off about pick 100 or pick 125, or player 100, 125, right in there. Which, if you just look at a draft board, that's basically middle of the fourth round. I guess 125 would be end of the fourth round, middle of the fourth round, right in there. But the point is, you mentioned as many swings as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Spielman has historically done most of his swings later. He's done some where he's come back up and taken swings in the first round, and obviously he moved up to get Dalvin. But this is a draft specifically offensively where I think you need more swings earlier. So to me, using one of your swings on a quarterback at 14 seems insane, and trading up with what you're going to have to give up to do it seems insane. So I'm hoping the aggressiveness is, use one of the threes, maybe both of the threes, maybe flip one of the threes and a couple of the fours to try to get up into round two. Keep 14, get a two, maybe be left a little bit with maybe half of what you had in the third and half of what you had in the fourth, but you at least have another quote-unquote high-impact swing.
Well, let me ask you this then. What is the perfect for you situation to get a quarterback or to take a swing at a quarterback? Because you can always find needs, right? You can always say, oh, well, the O-line needs help, or we need a third wide receiver or a second. I mean, you can always, you know, kick the can in different ways. But, you know, at some point, I mean, Kirk's on 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even have to take a guy that's ready this year, you know? And I think I was talking to you during the break about Ponder. And I couldn't remember if he just got thrown into the fire or not, but you've got 2 years to play with. If you draft a Kyle Trask, if you draft a Trey Lance,
yeah.
You know, he's still going to get that development time. Eventually, you got to do it, right?
Yeah. Well, here's where that situation, though, to this group, I think, is irrelevant. I do think Spielman and Zimmer, borrowed time's not the right word, but the clock, they're on the clock. Like, they've both been here a really long time. Spielman, and Cronin wrote this in his tenure as GM, I think, well, let me find the exact deal, because it's interesting, because he's been around for a really long time. I think it was towards the end of the story, so deal with me here. He's the seventh longest tenured GM in the NFL yet to deliver a Super Bowl to Minnesota. Five other GMs who have been around at least as long as Spielman have either reached the Super Bowl or won a Lombardi trophy. He's been around forever, going all the way back to the original Triangle of Authority, which you're probably too young to remember in the Brad Childress days. But he's been around for a while. Zimmer has now been around for a while. And to me, I think they have to have some serious cojones or some serious job security conversations with the ownership. They would really have to sell it to the group that this is great for our franchise moving forward. We're going to find ways to plug holes elsewhere. We've not only solved problems for this year, but we think we've solved one from years past. Like, to me, it's too tough of a sell for guys. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, that they're on the hot seat potentially. I'm just saying it's probably reality. So to me, like, if you're George Payton, for example, he just got a 6-year contract as general manager. He could bring Teddy Bridgewater in with Drew Locke, and he can still take a quarterback right now. He's got no pressure. He just got there, right? There's a handful of GMs that just got to their spots. Carolina, same situation. They've got Sam Darnold. They might be able to take a quarterback if they want to. And it's the same principle applies, is they've got time to wait. Spielman and Zimmer take a quarterback and say, we're not going to play him for 2 years. that might be irrelevant to them. They might not be here in 2 years. So that's why it just seems to me unlikely that they would go down that road. And so I'm very curious to see how they play it. Again, there's who knows what's going to happen in front of them. Who knows who's going to be aggressive to jump up because of how the board is going to go with the quarterbacks early, with the skill position players early. I think there's going to be guys at other positions. Offensive line would be one of them. Receiver might even still be one of them, where guys are going to be there at pick 9, 10, 11, 12 that maybe in a normal year when there was more high-end defensive guys, the defensive guys actually are the ones, the corners in particular, are the ones that you should probably keep an eye on for teams that want those guys, and obviously one of the quarterbacks that falls, if a team falls in love with that. So anyway, we talked a lot about the draft. It's all confusing. It's all a mess. I would just take an offensive lineman at 14. I would move around to try to get back into the second round. I would be willing to part with half of my fourth round picks, half of my third round picks to give me another opportunity at a second round pick. And to answer your question, I would not be opposed at all if a quarterback's there in the third round that you like. I don't think Kellen Mond is going to be there anymore. It seems like there's some pretty serious steam on him. But if you like Stanford guy who's played like seven games, Kyle Trask, as you mentioned,
like Florida guy,
probably a second round pick. Maybe they go in the second round and get him and then use those later picks to get the offensive lineman, another offensive lineman, towards pick, you know, 100 or 78, where they first pick in the third round. There should be a guy or two there if the draft experts are to be believed. We've got two segments left in the show. We're out at 6 because the Wild take on St. Louis at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. Pat Kessler's coming up, but our final opportunity to put a grand in your hand is now.
Yep, that's right. The Fan is trying to put a grand in your hand with the National Cash Contest. Head to KFAN.com and enter the keyword sports. That is sports on KFAN.com for your shot to win more.
And the Fan.
I wish the American media would take a great look at the views of the people in Congress and find out, are they pro-America or anti-America?
Pat Kessler.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
I can't trust Obama. He's an Arab.
Pat Kessler.
Tear down this wall.
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
Pat Kessler.
And now, to help Dan break down all the tough questions in politics, it's our own
Pat Kessler
Political Wonk.
I feel like a supermodel, except like times 10.
It's Channel 4's
Pat Kessler
with Dan Barrero on The Fan.
Are you hungry or are you starving?
Will you shut up, man?
No Barrera today. Guardsy in today. We're in the 651 Carpet Studios, and joining us now on the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline is our good friend, Pat Kessler. Where did my mouse go? There it is. I trust you are well, sir.
Well, we want to know where your mouse went.
What do you mean?
What we want to know. Well, where did your mouse go? Where did your mouth go? Keep up, buddy.
I'm trying. It's been a long day. It's been a really long day. Luckily,
sounds great. Very controversial show, though.
It has been, yeah. I always like to try to get one meaty topic into the days that I fill in to get all sides. And in this case, we got parents. Funny, I didn't hear from a lot of parents. I heard from officials who were fed up. I've heard from administrators who are fed up. But the parents who are yelling at the refs at the fourth grade traveling baseball and basketball and soccer games all over the country, I didn't hear from any of them, which I was stunned by.
Yeah, you know, I was an assistant coach for many years in baseball for Little League and everything from T-ball to Babe Ruth ball, you know.
Who would have thought
and
that?
Here is the thing. No, it's awesome. And the parents were not so much yelling at me like I was the first base coach or the third base coach. They would yell at their kids.
Yeah.
And tell them to do things that I didn't want them to do. Go farther. You can steal. Go. You know, things like that. And I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, you're the coach. You're the assistant coach. You should be the one telling them that stuff.
Yeah, so we had all sorts of stuff like that. The only one time that I remember we had to throw out a father.
Mm.
And I think he might have had an adult beverage in his giant Slurpee cup.
Yep.
All right, and he might have had one of those. And so we tossed him, and he came back with a bat.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
And he smashed in his own windshield on his car.
That seems counterproductive.
Yeah. So, but it happens, man. I mean, it was kind of discouraging to hear all of that and to hear how these refs and umps have to deal with it. And, you know, we got a high school kid at our games, and he's getting $15 a game. So, come on, man.
Well, and at some point, you're going to run out of refs, because the old refs are going to get old, right? And they're going to move on. They're going to do something else with the rest of their lives. At some point, you have to have some kind of feeder system for the rest, you know, to officiate the rest of their lives, right? And that's, where do you go? I mean, to catch people up, that's what I would always tell my sophomore basketball kids. I'm like, we're all here for a reason, guys. You know, I'm here because I need to get better. You're here because you need to get better. And certainly the officials are here at 4:45 in Gym B, you know, on a Tuesday night, because they need to get better too, you know? Like, that's, we're all here for the same reason, so let's cut each other a little slack.
Yeah, I just feel a little bad for kids, the young people who had to witness their parents misbehaving. And I got to believe there had to be some embarrassment there. That's all.
And that's what I said. And cuz I mean I just know from my own experience growing up, like, typically, like, we all knew who the parents were that were acting like idiots, and it didn't go on. The kid, we had enough problems, you know? Like, there might be girls at the game watching us, so you're trying to show off there. You're shooting 2 for 10, and you're annoyed because...
Well, in your case, yeah, both of those. Girls showing off and shooting 2 for 10.
Exactly. I was always terrible when the girls' team would show up to watch us. It was a disaster. Things got a little bit better progressively through high school, which is good. But, you know, when the St. Cloud tournament, when boys and girls were there together, and all of a sudden here comes the Dyna 7A team and the girl from Blake that you're trying to court, you know, she comes in, and
oh,
all of a sudden,
God.
Not that I haven't forgotten about it or anything, not that it doesn't still haunt me.
Yeah, I guess we're just living your life right about now. Yeah.
I go through Hallenbeck Hall, and I go, man, what could have been? What could have been?
Yeah.
You know, she's married and living in Texas right now. If I would have made this free throw, who knows how things would have turned out differently, you know? I mean, you make choices in life, but we notice the parents.
It's funny how you've tracked it up until present day. Yeah, but you know, that's normal. That's completely normal.
The parents, though, that's my point, is we've got enough going on. We don't need to worry about if you're going to get tossed and smashing your own windshield because you don't like the call, right? I mean, that's the point of this whole thing.
Think about it.
I'd rather not.
Out a bat and smashes in his own windshield. It was a very dramatic, and you know, I still talk about it to this day.
What I will say, lastly, I do appreciate what I've appreciated always about hockey dads, and I'm the only guy that grew up in Edina that never learned how to skate, which my wife still can't believe. We got out on skates because
none of us can.
No, you figure I'd learn it through osmosis, but I can't. I'm serious. I'm the only person that had lived in Edina for an extended period of time that has no business ice skating or playing hockey. What I always liked about the hockey dads when I would go to Braemar and watch my friends play was that, you know, they'd go back in the day, as you recall, the kids might not even know this, Edina was a dry town, which means you couldn't really buy alcohol there, right? So there was no, you know, Salute or, you know, there was Salute, whatever they're called now, you know, Cove. There wasn't any of those places where you could go get a drink in Edina. So
what happened was,
you know, Excelsior Boulevard. It was Bunnies and it was JJ's and it was everything there. So all the hockey dads would go there before the game, get ready for the ball game, right? Get ready for the puck.
You got to do it, yeah.
And Bunnies specifically. But they would always go top row. They would always go top row on the rail because then, you know, their wives don't have to deal with them yelling, swearing, you know, arguing with the coach, all those things. Like, I always liked the top row hockey dads because it seemed like they knew where they needed to be, you know, after having a couple of 2-for-1s at Bunnies before Edina EP.
Exactly. Then the kids aren't going to smell the alcohol. They're not going to drop their gloves and start a ruckus in the stands. I mean, that's
hopefully
just
not
how it works.
Hopefully not. Excelsior Boulevard, though, the stories the stadium can tell. I'll tell you that. Gopher spring game, 11 o'clock on Saturday, right here on the Fan. Kickoff is about 11:15. It's going to be a beautiful May day. There was no spring game last year because of the pandemic. 2 years ago.
Yeah.
There was no spring game open to the public because of pending weather. It was freezing cold. It got moved into the indoor, and only friends and family and the broadcast could be in there. Two years ago before that, or a year before that, Kessie, the spring game got moved from Saturday to Thursday because a snowstorm was coming. Bottom line is, it's the first opportunity in a long time for a spring game. You can't tailgate before the game, but I know you're going to be there on Saturday, and I know you can't wait.
Well, you said the magic words. You cannot tailgate before the game.
Why not?
So why would I go?
You're not going.
Why would I go?
Well, you could tailgate on your own.
The coverage and the sideline coverage on KFAN, no doubt about that. I intend to be sitting on a boat on a lake with a drink in my hand, listening to the game on the radio. Who wins that? Me.
You're going to have, it's going to be a rowboat. You're going to have your oars too, aren't you? That's going to be the way that you channel PJ.
I'm going to row a boat.
That's all I have to say.
I still can't believe you're not coming. I'm so down that you're not going to come. You haven't been in TCF Bank Stadium besides your cutout in
over a year. Yeah, and that's true. And by the way, thank you for that. But let's talk about this. As a season ticket holder, I mean, I could not even get a ticket. I could not get a ticket. It sold out to in
2 hours,
an hour.
Yeah.
And so I was reconsidering my very substantial commitment to a donation to the athletics department.
Substantial, you say? Wow. Well, we're happy for you.
And I was reconsidering, but then I thought, oh, what the hell? I'll be on a boat, rowing the boat, on a beautiful day, on a lake, on a boat. And again, I think I get the better of this deal.
Yeah, you probably do. I'm still just stunned by it. You'll be there, though, if allowed, for opening night, September, I think, 2nd, against Ohio State. It's a Thursday. You'll be there for that, right?
Well, it all depends. Are you going to hit the road for Colorado?
Oh, yeah.
For the preseason? Yeah, so that's I think, where we're going to see the inflection point. I think we'll all be... all of our listeners, I know, are 100% behind getting a vaccine. No vaccine reluctance among our listeners. I'm confident of that. And so we'll all be vaccinated. Let's get going. I mean, it's time. Let's go. Let's follow this team. I will be there for Ohio State. And I just cannot wait for Ohio State. It'll be great.
I like
Don't
that.
Be late.
Good rhyming. I can tell you've been taking your classes, your online classes. It seems like poetry in your retirement. I've said it a million times, and part of the reason I'm usually not one for spring football. Like, we do the broadcast, and it's usually annoying because there's nothing going on. Most coaches kind of treat it as just a practice. And you might see a few things, but it's cool because, most of the time it's fun because there's stuff for the kids and it's easy and, it's not a packed house, all of those things. I'm irrationally excited about the spring game Saturday for the first time ever. And mostly, Kessler, it's because of what you mentioned, that there's going to be a nice crowd and there's going to be a crowd. Like, people would always ask me, this last season, you probably did, like, what's it like? You're at the game. There's, 250 people there, maybe 125 on each side.
Yeah, right. I always wondered. Yep.
It was terrible. I mean, just flat out. Like, I know why they played the games. The TV, there was fun moments. Obviously, it was fun to see something in person after, not seeing anything for so long. But what I hope that comes out of it for all sports teams is an appreciation of what the fans do provide, because they, and I said this with PJ on Tuesday for our yesterday for our show, our spring game show, it was not fun last year principally because there was nobody there. And a touchdown didn't really feel like a touchdown. And a loss didn't feel like a loss. Like, in one way, it's like, oh, they lost. All right, I'm going to go to my car. I'm in my car in 5 minutes, and 20 minutes later, I'm home. Like, it's just the fans add such an element, specifically, I think, to college football, and certainly with the Vikings as well. Like, it's just, I can't wait for that to come back, and I'm excited that hopefully everybody that registered for a ticket a couple of weeks ago ends up coming to the game, because that does make a difference to the whole proceedings.
Yeah, what are we going to have, 10,000 people in there, something like that?
That's the limit. Right. I mean, that's how many tickets were distributed, so hopefully it's going to be a beautiful day.
Show up, and you're right, it's going to be a huge thing because it's been so bad this last year. And now we have a goal for next year when we'll all be able to get tickets. It won't be a problem. How many people does Alabama get for its spring game?
Typically,
how many fans show up?
Typically about 100,000. I think this year they had to cut it to 40, and they got it.
Thank you.
They got 40,000.
I mean, they have to cut it, and for COVID reasons, to 40,000.
Yeah.
Now, I think we're going to be so hyped by next year. I would love to see us fill that stadium. So, 10,000, it's going to sound like a huge stadium full of people. I'm confident. So, You need to bring your A++ game.
Oh, yeah, I'm prepared. Mister. Trust me, this is the most I've ever prepared for a spring game broadcast. Like, I know who's on the teams.
Well, that's discouraging to hear.
Well, no, because usually usually there's nothing going on. Usually it's like, well, we're not really even going to do a game. And my job is to basically, like, interview the players once they're done playing. But, so after Tanner Morgan, you know, throws four passes, he comes over and talks to me. I'm going to be on the field, and I'm going to have a microphone stand and a headset that I just throw, you know, 10 feet away from them and then go stand somewhere. But
it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Fantastic.
I'm excited about it. And it really,
I text you during interviews and stuff and make your phone ding.
Give me some pointers on how a professional would do it.
This is Pat Kessler reporting.
When we come back, the president is addressing the nation tonight. I want to get a heads up on what he's expected to say. I've got some COVID-19 stuff to discuss with you. And the first toaster email has also come into the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. We've got a Kessler toaster follow-up to get to. All of that in our final segment with Pat Kessler. He helps us wrap up the show before we hand it off to the Wild Radio Network for Wild and Blues.
FAN.
The NFL draft is tomorrow. We'll be broadcasting live as we break down all the picks right here on the radio home of the Vikings. The fans' complete coverage of the NFL draft is proudly presented by Pilot Game.
This is Pat Kessler.
Damn right it is. He's on the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline, segment number two. Final segment of the show. Guards in for Barrero today in the 651 Carpet Studios. We're out early tonight. The Wild and Blues coming up at the top of the hour. Kessler back for segment number two. President Biden is speaking tonight. What's that about?
Big deal. Yeah, you know, it's so big that I'm coming out of retirement just to do it. I'll be
Special correspondent is back?
I'm either thawing me out and dusting me off, and I will be back, baby.
This is Pat Kessler reporting.
Will you do it like that tonight when you sign off? When you do, so what are you responsible for tonight?
I am responsible for the address and the response. So President Biden is giving his first address to a joint session of Congress. It is not a State of the Union because presidents don't give State of the Union addresses in their first year, but it's very similar, same kind of deal.
And Tim Scott is Republican guy tonight, right?
Say that again.
Tim Scott is Republican guy tonight,
yeah,
too,
that
right?
Is correct. Senator Scott will be giving the response. What makes this really different is that with all of the State of the Union addresses, all of the speeches to Congress, joint sessions that we've seen before, this is going to be crazy. This will be crazy because nobody's going to be there. It's going to be only about 200 people. Normally it's about 1,600 people in the House of Representatives. You remember a year ago, this was a crazy last year because Nancy Pelosi tore President Trump's speech in half.
Yeah, that was stupid.
Remember that one?
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Oh, man, it's a good time.
That was ridiculous.
And there was that was going on, but tonight will be history because President Biden will be standing in front of two women for the first time in history. Speaker of the House is a woman. Vice President Kamala Harris is standing behind him. So first time in history we'll see that. So it's going to be really different, and it's going to be on the site of where just 113 days ago there was a violent insurrection against the United States to stop Biden from becoming president. So, I mean, all of this stuff is coming in to one place tonight. So it's going to be pretty cool, I think.
Well, before we get back to your role, because I'm not going to let you off the hook, I think the audience demands that you do it like this.
This is Pat Kessler reporting.
We're going to get to the bottom of that at the end and get a pledge from you that you will do it. In reading your notes, I was very intrigued by another note on his speech tonight that there is no designated survivor tonight. And I had no idea what that was until literally a month ago when I, of course, many years late, got caught up in the Designated Survivor show with Kiefer Sutherland, which I don't know if you've seen that show, but it's phenomenal. And it was two seasons on one network, and then Netflix, I think, picked up just season three, which made it completely different because there was swearing and sex and all kinds of stuff. It was wild.
Oh, I'll have to watch that.
But yeah, you'll want to skip right to season three. One and two, it'll probably be a little bit boring. But he was the Designated Survivor, and he's HUD's secretary guy. He got fired the day of the speech. Capitol blows up. he's the only person left. He's caught up in this massive conspiracy. Really good show. Really good show. It was one of those in the pandemic where you just blow right through it, right? My wife and I watch like three episodes every single night. But no designated survivor tonight. I assume it's because not everybody that would be in the designated survivor succession line is going to be at the speech. Is that a fair?
Yeah, let's talk about that. For the people who don't know this, for our listeners who don't really know, a designated survivor is one person normally who is set aside. You go to an undisclosed location, a safe location, in case there is an attack against the United States and the president and vice president are killed. I mean, see, you rarely have the vice president and the president in the same place. They don't fly on Air Force One together, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a line of succession. And it's the president, the vice president, and if they die, then it's the Speaker of the House. And then you've got the Secretary of State. All of these people are going to be at the event tonight. And then it becomes the head of the senator who's the head of the Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Pat Leahy. And so you know who is the designated survivor tonight if all of those people go out in a big explosion?
I have a feeling. Now, who is it? I was going to make a bet.
Janet Yellen.
Janet Yellen. Okay.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. So that's where we are right now. That's where we are right now. So there is no designated survivor because so few people will be there. Pretty much anybody would be able to take over. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting twist with all of the things that are going on. Only one member of the Supreme Court will be there.
Yep.
Only the head of the Department of Defense. So it's going to be a lot different tonight. So it's worth a look for sure.
President Tom Kirkman, by the way, in Designated Survivor, I would vote for that man. He was a hell of a leader. He was independent. He was an independent.
I've never seen that show. Yeah.
And because he was an architect, he wasn't in the pocket of Washington. He had nobody he was beholden to. He could just govern as he wanted to govern what was best, Pat Kessler, for the country, President Tom Kirkman. It was great.
Well, that sounds like President Trump. Same kind of president, not beholden to anybody. He's a billionaire.
You need to stop. You need to let it go. You need to move on. Come on. Okay? We need to stop this. It's President Tom Kirkman's time.
I'm just trying to get people react to your show.
Yeah, and then leave and go off to, you know, not go to the spring game this weekend and leave us in the wake. That's what you're trying to do.
So there you go.
So we know that. What's the president going to talk about tonight?
You know, it's actually going to be a pretty big deal. He is pushing his $1.7 trillion with a T, $1.7 trillion American Families Plan is what he's calling it. It's an economic recovery act, and there's a lot of stuff in it. It's things like college tuition free for community college. It's free education for pre-K for little kids, giving sick leave to people in this country who don't have it now, particularly during the COVID. There's so much in here, affordable child care. All of this is in this recovery plan, which is separate from his infrastructure plan, which is also going to be a very big deal. But that's what he's going to push tonight. He wants to talk about the COVID coming out of this pandemic and urge people to wear masks and get a vaccination. And then I think we're going to hear, and we always like the local angle, we're going to be hearing about George Floyd, the Derek Chauvin trial, racial inequality and police reform. So we're going to hear a lot of that as well. So it's going to be a big speech, big deal for President Biden. First time he's had this opportunity to speak to the nation in this kind of a forum.
Lastly, with Pat Kessler, who tonight, as special correspondent, will review President Biden's speech as well as Senator Tim Scott's rebuttal and then throw it back to, I assume, Frank and Amelia.
This is Pat Kessler reporting.
Doing that. Will you please? Will there be an opportunity to do that?
You know, I think I'm going to need to carve out an opportunity to do it because it'll be so memorable.
Well, how many things are you doing? Like, how do you know the format of how you're like, are you block A? First of all, are you A block? I have to imagine you are.
Duh.
Yeah.
Do I get thought out and called in if I'm not the lead story?
I wouldn't think. So you'll be.
I will not come in unless I'm the lead story.
Are you going to be on set? Are you going to be in?
I'll be in the room with Frank and Amelia. We will not be wearing masks. We're all safely vaccinated.
Yep.
And so I'm going to have to figure out a way to say, Frank and Amelia, back to you. this is Pat Kessler, something like that.
Yeah, I'm worried about the formatics that you're going to be in the same room. You're going to be probably in front of that monitor, right, that had your this autograph.
Pat Kessler. I'm going to have to practice this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in front of a huge monitor that enhances everything about me and around me. Yes.
Lastly, this is big, and the cheap shots went flying early and often on this one, which I appreciate. Minnesota has finally beaten New York in something. We did it for the Twins. The fact that Minnesota, with the census and everybody filling it out, we hung on unexpectedly in an upset to all 8 congressional seats, including the last of the 435 members of Congress. It was us in New York, apparently. We got the last seat. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's really a shocker. It really is. We all thought that Minnesota was going to lose a seat because the population of the country is growing. What happens in a census is they count how many people are in the country and where they live, and then they divide up Congress. And a lot of people are now moving to Texas and Florida and Arizona and Republican states, and they are gaining seats, and we barely held on by 89 votes, 89 people, I should say, 89 people more than New York in this census, and so we hung on to the last one. There's an update because your guy, Governor Andrew Cuomo, is preparing to go to court to retrieve, and this is his word, retrieve the congressional seat that Minnesota took from him.
Stop the steal?
From New York.
It's Stop the Steal, part two, the Cuomo edition?
It is, except now it's the Democrats.
Is he writing another book? Is he writing a book about this? Because we haven't had a Cuomo book lately, you know, since
Not for several months. All I know is that he was yelling at everybody about it, because that's what he does.
Well, I remember people, I think a little unfairly, talked about how Andrew Cuomo was Florida's greatest real estate agent. And everybody was putting him down there.
Yeah, this is a very big deal. If we can hold on to this, so we don't have to do this for another 10 years. Last time Minnesota lost a seat was in 1960. So it's been, I was 20 years old.
Exactly.
So
this is Pat Kessler reporting.
Have fun tonight. Welcome back. Hope your key card works. Hope everybody's nice to you. And enjoy not being at the spring game this weekend. And thanks for listening to us on iHeartRadio at 11 o'clock.
It's just unbelievable. Okay, this is Pat Kessler signing out.
Get ready for it. Thank you. That is Pat Kessler on the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline. And that wraps up the show, because we are out at 6 o'clock tonight because the Minnesota Wild are back in action. They haven't played in forever. Will there be rust, or is it rest? It's the Blues, so it might not matter. They're safely in the postseason. Now it's just figuring out where they're going to go. We'll review tonight's game. We'll preview tomorrow's Wolves game against Golden State on tomorrow's show. And, of course, get everybody ready for the draft, which is tomorrow. Ben Lieber tomorrow. Marty Wexler the third tomorrow. Dr. Dan's inbox tomorrow. So much more. Hope you join us tomorrow at 3 for Bumper to Bumper. Brett, thank you. Appreciate you helping out today.
Thank you.
Thanks to Ron Johnson. Thanks to Pat Kessler. Thanks, everybody, for listening and emailing in. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3. Bye.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.